Today's episode of the Masked Man Show is brought to you by SeatGeek. They're our presenting sponsor, and they're the only fan-friendly app for buying and selling sports and music tickets. Other sites have gone back to that same old tactic of showing you a lower price and then charging huge fees at checkout. But at SeatGeek, the price you see is always the price you pay. With SeatGeek, there's no guesswork. You'll know exactly how much you're paying, where you're sitting, and whether or not you're getting a good deal, all right from your phone. So drop your old site and experience buying and selling tickets the way it should be, brother. To start using SeatGeek, download the free SeatGeek app or go to SeatGeek.com.
Ooh, yeah.
And also, we're brought to you by... For over 20 years, DirecTV has been the exclusive home to NFL Sunday Ticket, the only way to get every live game every Sunday. I got good news for NFL fans. DirecTV has expanded the service. If you live in an apartment, or if you're an enrolled college student, you can get NFL Sunday Ticket without a satellite. To see if you're eligible, go online to NFLSundayTicket.tv. Stream every NFL Sunday Ticket game this season and follow your favorite team no matter where you live. Use the promo code RINGER at checkout and save 10%. Okay, guys, we've got a really jam-packed show today. First up, our Dave Schilling and Sam Donsky to run down SummerSlam and NXT TakeOver. And then at the end, we have a very special interview with the director and close friend of the show, Robert Green. He's a big wrestling fan, and he's got a documentary you have to see. He's gotten awards from Sundance, man. What have you done with your life? Stick around for that. First up, Donsky and Schilling.
Welcome to the Masked Man Show. I'm David Shoemaker, sometimes aka the Masked Man, and I'm joined here today by two of my very favorite people. Dave Schilling, how you doing?
Pretty good, man. And I forgot my deodorant.
Really?
Yeah.
I forgot my glasses. I'm podcasting for everybody out there. I'm podcasting in prescription sunglasses today. So this is full heel Shoemaker mode. And also, Ringer staff writer, is that the right title?
It's good.
Sam Donsky in his virgin appearance on the Masked Man Show and also on Ringer podcast in general. Is that right?
This is my first podcast ever. Oh, I've not even spoken out loud that many times before. So this
is... apologies in advance to all the people listening to this. Sam is learning to talk before our very ears. Welcome to Channel 33, Sam. You've been doing a bang-up job for the website.
Thank you. This is great.
It's a big week. It's SummerSlam week. Both Raw and SmackDown were... fun and sort of uneventful. As Schilling, you have a rant prepared on this. I can see it. I can see the passion behind your eyes.
I have my iPad out and it's all written down. I just every month the go home show is so formatted and structured in such an obvious way.
Yeah.
Where you have to have, you know, an in-ring confrontation. You have to have somebody doing color commentary and then a run-in. You have to have a sneaky finish to set up a six-man tag or a six-person tag. All these things that it's boring to watch. The pay-per-view, the show after the pay-per-view is always great because anything's possible.
Right.
But there's so it's such a finite sort of world that you're playing in when it's the week before a pay-per-view.
It's totally true. I mean, there's for all that they tried that they've tried and managed to change over the past month since the draft. And the brand extension, whatever, there's a very limited number of possibilities for a go-home. Well, at least in the WWE kind of, you know, like visual vocabulary, there's a limited number of things you can do in a go-home show. It's hard for that to change.
It also felt like they went from this is fresh to this is the same old very quickly. Like at the end of Raw, I was like Reigns on top, and
yeah.
He started the show with a promo that had some bad jokes, and I was like, where are we now?
I remember, I had a flashback to CM Punk's heyday this week when there was the kind of common refrain amongst smart fans like us that even though Punk was the champ, John Cena was closing shows. You
right.
know, like even when he wasn't involved in the CM Punk angle. And that's what this week sort of reminded me of, because John Cena and Roman Reigns closed both Raw and SmackDown, or SmackDown and Raw, respectively. I don't know. Should we read anything into that?
I don't think so. I know if with Raw, the ratings kind of peak in the middle. because people lose interest in a 3-hour television program that's not like the NFL. So I think that it's not that big of a deal that Roman's closing the show. It's more troubling to me that he's opening the show, that he's the first face that you see when you tune in, especially for a feud that is predicated on him being mad that two people got married. That's what he's like, how dare you marry him?
I, on the one hand, I don't mind. I think this is a perfect feud for Roman Reigns at this right now. Mm-hmm. I think it's great for Rusev. And I don't mind it being over something as silly as a wedding. I mean, listen, wedding angles, I wrote about it at Grantland. They're part of the fabric of pro wrestling. And they're used generally sparingly enough that it's always kind of fun and interesting. The problem is when you try to somehow convey that that is a serious angle. You know, I mean, this is a fine sort of throwaway mid-card, like almost comedy bit. But then when that becomes like a real, like serious, I want to beat you up angle, it doesn't quite read for me.
Yeah, it's quite strange.
I feel like that should have been a closed angle that they opened and shot on the Raw 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then this week doing the Lana's Honor stuff.
Doing the match.
That was giving away
the
match.
What the hell was that?
Not a short match.
And a clean finish?
Again, I don't mind it just because it's a little bit different. But you're right. The logic is lacking.
Yeah. Well, I don't have any interest in seeing that again unless Rusev destroys him like Brock and Cena a couple years ago at SummerSlam.
Did we like the match? I did not think that was a good match.
I didn't care. It was a throwaway to me. It was like, why am I watching this?
It's hard to really engage when you feel like it's going to be a light version of the match that you're going to see in a week.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think it was a great match. I think that I like Reigns and Rusev both as wrestlers. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of chemistry they have on a stage like SummerSlam. But yeah, I mean, I think they're both, Reigns in particular, obviously a little bit underrated or maybe appropriately rated at this point. People seem to kind of acknowledge that Reigns has gotten a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that what you said about people stopping, you know, people kind of tuning out for the last hour of the show. I don't want to get too far down this path, but when they start the cruiserweight division, and I don't think this is going to happen, but if they did the old Monday Nitro thing of really just having hour one as cruiserweights, would that help your engagement?
Absolutely. I mean, just from a sheer entertainment standpoint, that would be great. Just to have it be angles and matches dedicated solely to this division that you know is going to pop the crowd and get them excited for the next 2 hours. Because the crowd dies. If you go back to the first Raw of the new era after the draft where Finn Balor has his two matches and he wins, he beats Roman Reigns, the crowd was kind of like, all right, that's great. I mean, we'll cheer and everything, but we're exhausted after 3 hours. And Corpus Christi is also a bad crowd. So last week it was like, oof. Just a big fart in church.
Yeah, Donsky, you have thoughts on what I mean? Would a totally separate first hour make you care more about hours two and three?
I like it flowing all into each other. Well, first of all, who are our cruiserweights? Have we really established?
Grand Metalik is apparently the cruiserweight to watch. WWE just filed all the trademarks for him. But yeah, I mean,
that matters to me. You know, there's a version of the cruiserweights that I'm into, and there's a version that I'm.
What are you into? Where does Neville rank on your cruiserweights to be interested in scale?
I think I'm not into what Neville's been doing on the main roster. I was hoping that they would bring him back with something real to do, and I don't know. I don't think that being the flag bearer for the cruiserweight division is not enough. I think that the Neville of NXT was getting over, and I feel like now he was kind of marginalized already as a kind of lower mid-carder, and now to say, okay, you're a cruiserweight, what do you how do you move up from there?
Who is the giant guy who was in NXT version 2.0 who's like Welsh and now he's doing Cirque du Soleil?
A giant Welsh person?
Wasn't he Welsh? They're really jacked, like he looked like Batista.
Oh man, I have no idea.
Oh man, I remember back in I fantasy booked him and Neville as a tag team years ago. It was like the new British Bulldogs or something.
I think that I'm thinking back to the WCW cruiserweight division. And I mean, this could just be a difference in how they booked certain guys versus how WWE booked certain guys. But you take like the way that Jericho, you know, was booked in WCW as kind of a cruiser. That's a tough that's a tough thing to overcome versus when he debuts in WWE or WWF, he's just
he's there
with The Rock. He's there.
But I think when you look at the way WCW did it at the beginning, it was a unique part of the show that no one in America had ever seen.
Sure.
These guys doing holds and high spots that were revolutionary for American wrestling television. And that was enough to get over. You can just watch Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero wrestle every week, and you don't care if they have a character, if they have an angle outside of their competing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's getting the Cruiserweight Classic over, is doesn't have to be about, you know, fireworks or neon entrances or anything. It's just about these two guys beating the hell out of each other and popping the crowd. So when you start this Cruiserweight division, I think you have to play it up exactly like you did on the Cruiserweight Classic, where there's no Jericho-like characters, there's no soap opera drama. It's just these guys are competing for a championship, and there are rankings, and there are statistics and point total, something that makes it feel like a competition instead of the typical WWE product.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think and the biggest thing that you know, those old WCW matches, and the Cruiserweight Classic, I think, is a great example, is that it's just a different thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
It's like, if it were, if they just changed, I mean, if whoever's booking the Cruiserweight Classic just took that ethos and took over Raw, like, Raw would not be very good, right? I mean,
right.
for all of our complaints about Raw, like, sure. it's the baseline that we judge everything else
mm-hmm.
by, and the reason why, I mean, one of the reasons why, you know, you fall in love with Lucha Underground is because it just feels different.
Right.
And it's great, but it's the excitement is the difference.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they do, you know, especially with a lot of the cruiserweights not, I mean, we know that they're not going to be a totally separate division because, why don't we, I mean, this is an interesting segue, I guess, to the, to NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 2, because Gargano and Ciampa were wrestling in the Cruiserweight Classic, and now they're also like a legit tag. Legit, I don't mean to demean the size of cruiserweights, but they're a normal weight class tag team competitor in NXT, right? Mm-hmm. So we know that they're not totally cordoned off.
Right.
I mean, there's going to be some crossover, and you know, I said this on the podcast last week. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Finn Balor was positioned as a WWE cruiserweight just for the sake of getting the division over, and ooh, then
that's tough.
Brought back.
Yeah,
into,
I don't know.
I like, don't want
it. No, I don't want it either. But it would.
Yeah.
But like, if they're going to sort of open up. I mean, just like AJ Styles was an X Division champion, and then was, you know, .. the TNA champ, right, or the NWA champ, whatever.
I feel like I'm Vince here, you know, but. That was my first concern on that first Raw was he looked small, and I don't want any reminders about the fact that Finn's a small guy.
Well, he's 189 pounds or something.
Small.
He's really tiny.
What, 180? Are they listing him at 189?
I think he's 190 as they list him.
And that's high, right?
What, by WWE weight, he's got to be like 240, though. I mean, everybody gets a little boost, right?
Right, but he's jacked, and just his moveset makes him a threat against basically anybody except for Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's also got an inch or two on AJ Styles, which I mean, maybe that's partly why AJ Styles is on the Tuesday show, because, you know, I mean, I think that they have to make some, same with Apollo Crews, maybe. You got to get some people away just so there's not that lingering question. Honestly, 205, I mean, I've stood next to a lot of these guys. If Dolph Ziggler walks around at much above 205, I'd be shocked.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're not. It's a sort of arbitrary classification.
Yeah,
yeah. Do you know what when AJ debuted, there were a few promos. I remember, I think Jericho kind of went into his size a little, and I didn't like that. And I feel like they've gotten away from that with AJ.
Well,
I think it's been to his benefit.
I think that's primarily, well, maybe not primarily, but partially because when you're a babyface, being small is a virtue because that means you're a better underdog. When you're a heel, you can't really be made fun of for being short because now you're not a threat to the superstar babyface anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess with the, when you're a heel, you can use weapons or whatever else exactly. to balance it out.
Yeah, they cheat. That's the definition of a heel.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, well, listen, I mean, first of all, Mason Ryan was the Nexus member. I think I said NXT, the Nexus member I was going after. I would someday, when Mason Ryan gets done with Cirque du Soleil, I would love to see him make a comeback and unite with Neville just for no reason other than to satisfy my fantasy booking. Let's talk about NXT TakeOver just really briefly, and then we'll get into the SummerSlam card, and I'm sure everything else will fall into place, hopefully, from the week from there. NXT TakeOver Brooklyn last year was the highlight of the weekend. I mean, SummerSlam weekend is, as I've written before, just it's Mark WrestleMania, or Smark WrestleMania, you know? I mean, it's the, you know, they're clearly booking the big show to appeal to fans like us. The question, and I wrote about this for this week on theringer.com, everybody check it out, the lingering question is whether or not the SummerSlam card represents a new status quo, or whether it's like as fleeting as The Rock coming back for a WrestleMania one shot, you know? I mean, so all of that goes to, all of that is to say that this is Smark WrestleMania weekend, and NXT is weirdly more significant now than SummerSlam as far as just getting fans like us super excited. This card doesn't have quite the weight that last year's card does, but there's a lot of really cool stuff. The title match is Samoa Joe versus Nakamura, which it doesn't matter. This, like, that match could happen, you know, in a rec center in like a tiny ring, and you would still stand in line for 2 hours to go see it. I don't know. What do you guys have thoughts on that match?
I think it's going to be interesting to see how they book it, because whoever wins is sticking around. Whoever loses is probably getting called up in a month or two.
Yeah.
So you've got to wonder, is Samoa Joe the guy that they need on the main roster, or is it Nakamura? And if it is Nakamura, how do you book him to stay strong while also getting him out of the way? Or this could be the first of a series of three matches. I don't know. I mean, NXT is in a very strange position where it could go in a variety of directions. The roster is depleted, and you don't know how they're going to book it going forward. So I'm curious to see how this pans out.
Go ahead, Sam.
They should both be up yesterday, I think. This is one match too many already. I feel like, I don't know, I would love, if they really want to, you know, roll the dice and have some faith in their NXT booking, I would love to see them, you know, have this be the last straw and bring them both up.
Yeah.
It's time.
That's kind of what I was thinking, actually. Just the logistics of this, like Dave, you were talking about, is what sort of interests me the most. I mean, they clearly did not decide to have either of these dudes drafted.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them, I think, could show up on SmackDown this coming Monday and be the number one contender, right? I mean, you could book either of them that way. And I don't think that that's outside of the realm of possibility for one of them. Or, I mean, I don't think they're going to run the same gimmick with both. But one thing that we saw recently that really did work was Kevin Owens showing up on Raw with the NXT title. And I don't know if they'll go down that path again, but with all of the kind of quote-unquote real sports aspects they're bringing into it, you could see in the NXT title having some weight on one of the main shows. But also, I love the idea of them just both getting called up the night after, you know, on Monday, maybe to different shows.
Yeah. One to each. Yeah.
And then having a free-for-all for the title. Because really, at this point with the NXT roster, and I love so many of the guys who are down there, they kind of just need a full reset. Because Joe and Nakamura are too far above the rest of the class.
Right.
And it's cool to keep doing the thing where Joe can bring somebody along or whatever, but I would almost rather, you know, the No Way Jose era start now and just sort of get acclimated to it than NXT is a great arena to play around, you know, with different things.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's necessary to get too bound to certain, you know, to the way they've been doing things.
I think they're worried about touring revenue going down, because they don't care about how many people watch the show, because the show is just a way to get people to subscribe to the network. But because they're going out to, you know, festivals, or they're going overseas and they're trying to get decent gates with these people, you're not going to want to have No Way Jose versus Ty Dillinger, as much as I love Ty Dillinger headlining a touring company.
Yeah. I mean, I love Ty Dillinger, too. But you're absolutely right.
Awesome. I love that.
But it's totally... I mean, listen, this NXT show... I mean, the NXT TakeOver show is almost... And I don't mean this as an insult, but it's like a... It's a really great indie wrestling show. Not with the talent, but in the fact that, like, you don't really... You care more about just looking at the card and saying, okay, and knowing NXT than, like, the specific storylines and, like, that kind of stuff, you know?
Right. I mean, but if, like, if you... When did Nakamura come over... I forget, but I remember when he came over thinking
it was like, WrestleMania weekend. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you had said then that he's not going to be on the SummerSlam card, I would have flipped out. I don't know.
especially after Finn spent way longer than I think he was promised down in NXT, which is fine. It was great for him and great for the brand. My guess is that when someone like Nakamura signs a contract in 2016, there's a little bit more of a direct guarantee of how much time they'll spend in the before they get up onto the main roster.
Right.
I mean, I like Joe, you watch that Dallas match and he's just hulking around and bleeding, just looking like this dominant. I mean, you could have booked him against Brock for SummerSlam. I think you could have made that work if you'd brought him up. I mean. I think that they're both just so ready, and I'd rather...
They're head and shoulders above everybody else in NXT, no question about it. With Finn and American Alpha and all these guys gone, they're the last two guys sort of holding up the brand. And the best you can do in this case is hope that it's going to be like an ECW sort of thing where you just keep passing the torch to the next generation.
All right, let's run through this card a little bit more just to fly through it. Asuka versus Bayley, certainly has the potential to be the match of the weekend. You know, I mean, there's no reason to oversell it, but like that potential is there. Those two have interesting chemistry, but I think the potential to have really great chemistry. And Bayley's another one that could, or Asuka too, both of them could be on the main roster. I mean, it's crazy. You look at the NXT card and, you know, for as interesting as SmackDown has been since the brand split, there are clearly some holes that these NXT standouts could fill. Bobby Roode has a match against Almas. The Revival versus Gargano and Ciampa for the tag belts. No Way Jose versus Austin Aries, which I love Austin Aries' role now, is just putting, I mean, he's putting guys over in the most interesting way possible.
Yeah.
I mean, he's fun to watch for a guy that will probably lose most of these feuds in the end. And Ember Moon versus To Be Announced, which I love that there's a TV. This is an indie show. There's
really is,
spots. Any of those matches stand out to you guys?
I'm really into Bobby Roode's theme music. That's all I'm going to say right
so
now.
So good.
Bobby Roode has the greatest theme song in WWE history, besides, I think, Big Boss Man's.
It reminds me of...
Wow.
It reminds me of... I'm not going to sing that theme that Christian had for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm not going to sing it.
It's like an opera. Yeah.
You know.
It's really good. We'll drop that in later. Bobby Roode is... I mean, it's so weird to when someone like Bobby Roode actually gets a run in WWE or NXT or whatever. You almost thought it would never happen. Same with AJ Styles, but man, I mean, like the what might have been, like when you think just the counterfactual booking of like what if one of both of these guys were called up to WWE or signed with WWE 5 years ago,
right,
or 8 years ago.
I mean, if you're looking for, I mean, Bobby Roode could be the heel champ of NXT, right?
Yeah, they can both be the main eventing in NXT, but it seems like their role is going to be to put over guys like No Way Jose and move them up the card.
No Way Jose, I mean, so I don't want to spend too much time talking about that one dude, but like he's a really interesting test because I watch him and I enjoy it. I mean, it's obviously there's a little bit wanting in the gimmick, but it's still like it's hard to watch him and not just sort of feel like this isn't going to go over on Raw because of the lack of success they've had with some of the
like kind
of
Rose.
Lighter gimmicks.
Yeah.
when they make the transition. Although he's got a good look, and I mean, I don't know. He's a babyface, or he can work as a babyface, which makes, you know, maybe there's a little bit more like Junkyard Dog and you know, just kind of getting the kids excited to him.
Like Too Cool, Scotty Too Hotty, or Rikishi.
Sure.
Or all those guys who were never really a threat, but they were always able to pop a crowd.
Yeah. Sam, No Way Jose thoughts or
yeah,
anything?
I mean, I just hope they, lean into it and see it through. I don't want them to hedge.
Yeah.
I think that,
maybe instead of a cruiserweight division, we should have an all dancing gimmick division. I feel like that could fill out a whole show.
Dancing with the Superstars. Yeah. Oh, wow. They've great network idea.
They've got Naomi doing a...
By the way, her ring gear now is just off the hook. Like, yeah, it's my... Her entrance on... has she done it before?
No.
Her entrance last night?
Time. Like, that's happening. Naomi's happening now.
It was so good. It made me so excited. And again, just to see, like... Oh, man. I mean, I love a ring gear. There's just, after watching the Olympics, I'm very into full body spandex ring gear. Like, there's something very kind of like functional about it that I'm really into. And also, it looks great. So.
I mean, other than, I think, you know, Cena closing the show by going wild, I thought that was the second best part of the show was Naomi.
Someone on Reddit pointed out that AJ Styles has been with the company for just how many months, and he's already gone through 5 announce tables. Like it's like his greatest feud in WWE right now is with the
Spanish announce table.
Yeah,
that's why they had to put him on SmackDown, because there's no table down there anymore on Raw.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's a really good point. It's that you thought it was to continue the Cena feud, but really it was considered to continue the announce table feud. Well, I mean, NXT, I'm super excited for it, but the big show, not the big show, the wrestler, but the big show of the weekend is obviously SummerSlam. Before we let it get too far away, let's start going through the card and just jump in when you guys have thoughts. I'm just going to start at the bottom of the Wikipedia page. There is a 6-woman tag team match from the SmackDown roster, with Carmella, Becky, and Naomi versus Natalya, Eva Marie, and Alexa Bliss. Over-under on Eva Marie wrestling in this match?
I mean, I think she has to. Or if she doesn't actually compete, she's going to get thrown in the ring and she's going to get hammered by Becky. Just beaten up.
I feel like Eva Marie's getting the pin.
Really?
She's winning the match?
She's winning the match.
I joked about this some last week happening. With Aubrey Sitterson, but there'd be nothing better if she like did the thing where she wasn't going to wrestle. But then when she actually got in there, just literally just like drew massive blood from Becky Lynch, just like beat the living hell out of somebody. That would be great.
Yeah, I love it. I love what they're doing. I think it's working. I think
you just can't keep it up that long.
They can't
though.
Keep it up.
Yeah, they have to. Someone's got to get their receipt on this.
Yeah, it's true. Although, I mean, I haven't been keeping track of ratings. I mean, I guess there's some question as to whether or not with all the content they have now. I was talking to. Or Sean Fennessy, the editor-in-chief of The Ringer, and he's a casual fan, and was just like, man, SummerSlam, like, I have to do a lot of homework before SummerSlam.
Right.
With Raw and SmackDown both being quote-unquote mandatory, I feel like there's a lot of casual fans that probably have watched less percentage of mandatory content than they normally would have, and I think that the odds of, like, someone like Sean even having an idea of what the Eva Marie gimmick is right now is pretty slim. All that is to say, maybe they can keep doing it for another month just to make sure everybody gets exposed to it, mm-hmm. you know? But I agree. Someone's got to get a crazy receipt. And I think based on my expectations of Eva Marie on the main roster, they're already way ahead of the curve. I mean, this is fun.
They booked her perfectly.
And Becky, I mean, Becky's really great as this, I mean, sort of perfect as the anchor of the SmackDown women's division.
Perfect.
When the Divas Revolution, the Women's Revolution, whatever started, I remember saying that she is going to be sort of, she's the one to watch, because if they're really serious about women's wrestling, then she can, you know, it's like Daniel Bryan finally getting the push on the main roster or on the men's side. If they're serious about it, she's going to be a star.
Yeah.
But if they're going to keep doing one match a week and one, you know, one feud at a time, she's going to be the first cut, sort of, you know?
Yeah.
And seeing her flourish on SmackDown has been really great.
She also made some comments, not that this is really meaningful, you can obviously say whatever, but she made some comments being very supportive of you, Marie, and saying, you know, I love what she's doing, and, you know, I think she is doing her job really well, and I thought that was a sort of, you know, you could see it totally going the other way, and You could see people resentful.
She's not a worker. How dare she do this? But, I mean, I think especially when you are the standard bearer and you're the one that's supposed to be the number one person in the division, you have to say, it's my job to not only get myself over, but to get everybody behind me over so that we can sell more tickets and more merchandise and be bigger stars.
Sure. And like I said, I mean, I talked to Daniel Bryan a couple years ago when he was still wrestling and you know, everybody, fans like us, on some level, wish that the whole roster was Daniel Bryan's, right? Right. And what he said was, no, like the Big Show has to exist for me to matter, right? Mm-hmm. John Cena has to exist for me to matter. Mm-hmm. Because it's a variety show. It's a circus sideshow, you know? And for, you know, if you're Becky Lynch, on some level, you want to be the best wrestler and that have that be your thing and let other people excel at other things.
Right. That's, you know? I think that's what bothered people about The Click, was that The Click... Certainly, in both the WWF and WCW iterations of it, were some of the most over guys in the company. But what they also did was interject themselves into every hot angle and bury people.
Yeah.
So you want a Becky Lynch who's like, I'm going to bring Eva Marie up.
Yeah.
I'm also just glad that she is getting to be a flag bearer, because she was so over going into WrestleMania. And then she kind of got... Awesome
When I went to the house show at Staples Center, she was the most over wrestler.
She was
with the exception of AJ Styles for like the 30 seconds that it took the fans to realize that he was a heel. Like she was seriously got the best babyface pop of the night.
Well, I mean, I think that they were planning on doing just Sasha Charlotte at Mania, and I think that Becky got so over that they just injected her into that feud.
Yeah, it's crazy. Next on the card is Cesaro versus Sheamus in the first of their Best of Seven series, which is... Wow.
Who asked for this?
Huh?
Who asked for this?
I have so many thoughts. This is where, like, where in the world is Sami Zayn, where the search begins with this match. But interesting that this is so beside the point, but was it the last pay-per-view where it seemed like all of Crispin, like someone claimed all of Crispin Waugh's moves? Like, whenever someone does the crossface, I think Kevin Owens did it, right? And it was just like, and someone did the triple Germans, and it was like, and I was like, it always feels, whenever I see the crossface, I feel like they're trying to reclaim that from like the darkest part of wrestling history.
Right.
Introducing a best of seven series, which is also most famously Booker T and Chris Benoit, if I remember correctly, is another that for some reason it always just screams out to me. Listen, I don't hate Cesaro versus Sheamus, and I like that Sheamus's role as it stands on Raw with the roster, the small roster that it is now, is sort of the perfect role for Sheamus, I feel like. And he and Cesaro work well together. I don't think this is a great like position platform for either of them, but maybe it's the best use.
I feel bad for both of them, just because when you think about Finn Balor coming up and taking over the Raw main event at SummerSlam, means Roman Reigns drops down into the U.S. title mid-card, sort of upper mid-card area. That means Cesaro, Sheamus, and also Sami Zayn, who's not even wrestling at SummerSlam,
that we know of,
all their spots bumped down. So it makes me feel just like these guys are getting a raw deal just because Roman Reigns had to fall down the card. Like, Cesaro or Sheamus could be working with all kinds of people, but they're stuck together just to have something to do.
I mean, when Cesaro was shooting, was he shooting? I don't know. After the draft,
probably not.
I kind of think he was, but I don't know.
Meltzer said that he was. I think it seemed like there was very little scripting going on that night in general. So,
but you could see. I mean, whether it was or wasn't. I mean, SmackDown would be a great place for Cesaro right now. I mean. That IC title feud seems like just put him in that scene.
I was thinking about this the other day, and I think there's two ways to look at it. I mean, on the one hand, Cesaro on SmackDown, if they really went all in on SmackDown being the wrestling show, like it has been, like it was once known for, like he would be perfect, and he would be a headliner almost immediately if he were there. That said, maybe the move is to leave him on. I mean, if you're going to push him, make him find a way to excel on Raw. He's a different sort of guy there. He'll have to improve the sort of the charisma or the mic skill side of the skill set. I mean, if you look back at old SmackDown, certainly there were guys like Edge and Eddie and even Benoit that became bigger characters because they were the only thing resembling a character on the program.
Yeah.
And that might be a more obvious path for Cesaro to get over.
My favorite example of someone who was basically useless until the brand extension is JBL.
Yeah.
JBL was basically doing Stone Cold Light, where he would walk around with his backwards baseball hat drinking beer and maybe pop into a vignette or something. But then they give him this fresh new character, and he finds some sort of actual charisma besides props, because he was just, it was all props. It was cigars and beers and wacky tattoos when he was in The Acolytes. So I think Cesaro could be a guy like that who get rid of the James Bond ripoff thing and give him something fresh, and maybe he can get over.
Don't I hate the James Bond thing so much, but don't give him something fresh. There's nothing we've tried. We've had something so fresh awful. Every month with this guy.
Sure, it's so awful.
It's the dumbest thing. Like we know what you're going for. You even have the gun barrel in his Titantron. It's gross.
I have two more questions about this match.
Okay, good shoot.
Please,
no pun intended.
The first is Booker going to mention his best of seven on the pre-show?
Oh, it's a
no, you can't.
I mean,
you can't. Who do you wrestle against? Just a guy.
Yeah.
Just a guy. This guy from Canada. You don't know him.
If he just said, you know, I have some experience with the Best of Seven series, that would get people on Twitter fired up. Like, maybe that would be the best drop they could make.
And my second question is, if you're doing a Best of Seven, how do you have one guy win
the first two?
I know that's not part of the series, but...
This is number one.
Is number one, but... Like, doesn't the impetus for a best of seven have to be a split? Like, how would you even justify that?
Or at least some stakes. There are no stakes to this. It could be loser leaves town best of seven. It could be number one contendership for the U.S. title. Something that makes us care who wins four matches out of seven or five.
Booker Benoit was, I think, for the number one contendership, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, they could just go old school. Like the stakes that I'm interested in would be loser leaves town for Cesaro, so that he could go to SmackDown, or Sheamus has to shave his head, Matt. Like a hair versus contract match.
I like that one too.
Or just, you know what, do two out of three falls at SummerSlam and make SummerSlam.
I don't know if we have we're on match two of this card. I don't know if we have enough time for a two out of three falls match. This seriously could be. Like 10 minutes, or it could be 1 minute.
Yeah.
You just don't know based on how the card shapes up. The next is Miz versus Apollo Crews, which is... Ugh. Has it gotten short shrift over the past couple of weeks, or have I just been falling asleep when they've been on?
Deservedly so. This is such lazy booking. The Miz has done so much good work this year to get the belt over, to get himself over, and to just establish a beachhead on the card. And then they keep throwing him guys like Titus O'Neil, Darren Young, Miz, Cruz, Apollo Crews, who are not over.
Yeah.
These guys are not over, and it's burying the Miz.
I think Apollo Crews is the right. This is a great spot for him. I boldly proclaimed in a tweet that probably nobody saw that I thought that he was going to be in the top tier of SmackDown by WrestleMania, and I was wrong because he got over. I mean, he was put up in the top tier the first night of SmackDown. Yeah. I mean, obviously he's not a headliner there yet, but. I mean, I just wish they would figure... I mean, they need to figure out what they're doing with Apollo Crews. They need to figure out if he's going to be a character or if he's just going to be a worker. And I think that putting him in a sort of... We keep saying it, but a sort of, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit role is not a bad thing, Just let him be awesome in the ring and keep the talking to a minimum until they kind of figure out what his character is. Because... upbeat, I really want to win this babyface is not a character.
Yeah, it's not happening.
They've done a great job of making that work with American Alpha, where they're starting to really get momentum just because they're so good in the ring. But for whatever reason, Apollo Crews is not able to connect with his work in the way that they can.
I think tag teams can just get over as being great workers more easily because, obviously the tag team division traditionally has been less character driven, the standouts like Demolition aside, but it's and also it's just cooler to see tandem moves.
Yeah.
It's for a casual fan and even fans like us, there's great team moves for some reason convey great wrestling more than, a 360 off the top rope or something like that.
Yeah. The stuff that Apollo Crews does do that is noteworthy and visually engaging doesn't excite me the way that a tandem move that American Alpha does.
I also think it's probably too soon to say, even if American Alpha is getting over.
Yeah.
It's been only, they haven't really had to do
much. It's a lot of tell not show with that. I mean, like they've shown us some good stuff, but they're getting over sort of in the way that Miss Elizabeth's Beauty got over, which is that Vince McMahon just said it over and over again until we all believed it.
And they're squashing a lot of teams that are not doing anything right now. The Ascension pops up on SmackDown to lay down, or the Vaudevillains, or all these teams that are just like detritus on the roster.
Yeah. Well, in the future, we're going to have to fantasy book that tag team division. Because, like, I like what they're doing with all the teams getting in there and brawling together. I'm still not quite sold on, like, that tag division needing its own belts. But we'll, I mean, maybe, here, I'm just going to fantasy book right now. Joe and Nakamura show up on SmackDown as a tag team.
I love it.
And then just destroy everybody. That's the way to get tag belts over, is have, like, guys you actually are scared of holding them.
Right.
When the Ascension walked down on SmackDown, they were like, they haven't really found their footing yet in WWE.
And the Ascension?
Yeah.
You can say that. They've fallen off the cliff and are tumbling slowly to the ground. Miz is going to win this match. I mean, this should be on the pre-show. This might be.
There's nothing that's designated, I don't think, as the pre-show right now. Okay, Enzo Amore and Big Cass versus Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens. Is this the... shaking your head.
This is another match where I just feel like this is lazy booking. Why, logically, character-wise, why is Kevin Owens now friends with Chris Jericho?
Because they're both Canadian.
Yeah, but Kevin Owens' gimmick has always been, I don't like anybody.
Yeah.
I hate baby faces, and I hate heels, and I especially hate announcers.
I agree it's been super lazy booking, and yet I feel like Owens and Jericho are so good that they've made it work. Like, Owens has been kind of a little prickly still to Jericho. He's still kind of been like, I mean, you could turn on him at any moment. You sort of feel like
that's,
Owens has been so good at threading that needle.
This is not a defense of the booking, although I like this. I like this gimmick this angle in a very, like, on a very superficial way that I'm not ashamed of. Like I said, like, it's basically just a feud that's based on the fact that these are like three of the best four talkers in the business. You know, I mean, they're just, and they're giving them, you know, free reign just to go out and have a good time. And they're also all great workers. But I think that, to not give WWE too much credit, what's making me feel totally okay about what you were saying, Dave, is that I feel like that Kevin Owens is going to turn on Jericho, or Jericho is going to turn on KO. And this is like, we've seen this in KO's indie career before he got up to WWE. Like, the tag team that turns into the feud is a great way to elevate him.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't think Jericho is going to be turned on. I think
just he's got to stay the heel.
Yeah, just from looking at his Twitter and knowing, you know, what he says about the role that he prefers, he's going to stay a heel for a long time.
And he's been, I mean, people were texting me about this Monday night. Like, the way that he's transformed himself at this late stage of his career into, I mean, on the scale that he's working, one of the best heels in the company.
Yeah.
Is just pretty amazing.
Especially when you have The Miz stealing his gimmicks left and right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jericho just transformed before our eyes, and it's like, it's sort of silly, but it's just, it works, you know? Yeah.
And I think what people are forgetting a little is that when he came back this time, at first, he was teetering on the edge of like, oh man, like, has this passed Jericho by? And he just, you know, flipped the switch.
The guy's a catchphrase machine, man.
He just found his sea legs and just...
He's really good. And I think it helps that Enzo is like making fun of him. He's calling him like John Bon Jericho and like what, like I think that you have to take, and I think on Jericho's part, like, there was a point where he just stopped wearing a shirt after everyone had just made fun of the way he looks in tights for like 6 months or whatever many months. The fact when he was just like, yeah, I'm just gonna like sit on this ladder with a scarf and no shirt on, that it's just the embracing of the phase of his career that he's in makes him just such a more delectable heel.
Totally.
Who do we think is gonna win this match? Is this an Enzo and Big Cass special? Or
at first I said Jericho and Owens because you want to keep this going, but now that I think about the potential for it to be like a Mega Powers explode, but for Canadian heels, I think Enzo and Cass win. Keep up their momentum,
but for Canadian heels, should just be a tag. Like what can we? What other gimmicks can we run back from like the 80s? But for Canadian heels,
the Bushwhackers. Yeah. But for Canadian heels, I have Enzo and Cass here. They keep rolling.
I think no question, Enzo and Cass.
But you were saying to me before we went on the air that you've actually had difficulty picking, and I love this. I love this because I do this every time I do a pay-per-view write-up. you think that you know exactly how this is going to go until you're forced to actually make the pick, and then you realize that it doesn't matter at all who wins or loses.
Yeah, this is a match that is the definition of that match, that it just, who cares? I mean, it's more about just watching these guys compete and having something to do so they get their pay-per-view payday.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's part of it's just the way that wrestling works, and part of it's the writer is right in such a way that if Vince McMahon changes the pinfall on event day,
yeah.
It's a minor tweak. That's in many cases the least significant thing that could happen. Like the winner, the loss doesn't matter.
Totally.
Sam, agreed?
Agree. I mean, I think that out of all these guys, Cass is the one that is highest on the, you know.
Do you agree with this? That he's the, like, was he on your personal rankings that high?
No, I think it's, I mean, if this is me, I think it's time for Owens to make his move.
Yeah,
totally.
So, I mean, if Owens has to, you know, they love to do that thing where the guy eats the pin and then bounces up the card, that's fine with me, but.
The dirty secret here is that Enzo and Cass are the New Age Outlaws.
Yeah.
And
well,
you
can't split them up.
No.
I don't mind, you know, our boss Bill Simmons is a big fan of Cass. Like, he thinks he's the future, and a lot of people, I like Cass, but I'm all in on, I mean, I will agree with that just for the sake of letting Enzo just sort of run in the, you know, just like, you know, just jog right behind him and meet minimal wind resistance, you know, and so that when it turns out that Enzo is actually the star of this group, like it'll be a wonderful surprise to everybody.
Right.
If he gets pushed, it's going to be a failure. Mm-hmm. You know, if he gets a random booking championship match on Raw and pulls out a win, like that's what's going to get him really over.
Yeah.
I just hope they realize that if they separate them, it's over.
Yeah, it's over.
Like, I don't know if they do. I think they do, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, they could feud at some point, but yeah, it's got to be like they're away from each other would be a problem, I think, at least the way it stands now. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on. New Day versus Gallows and Anderson. Doctors Gallows and Anderson.
This is another match where I just feel like they have not tried hard enough. The bookers, that is.
Yeah.
The New Day's momentum is stalling. This should be their biggest feud ever, because this is finally a team that's a team that has cohesion, that is their polar opposite in a lot of ways, and that Gallows and Anderson are just like, they're bruisers, they're like the Revival, and
now they're a comedy team.
Yeah, now they're doing comedy.
It wasn't so bad.
Pretty good. I mean, that was almost a JBL level of reinvention, like when they did the brand split and suddenly Gallows and Anderson are just doing shtick,
right?
Which is something they're sort of known for, but it goes against what we knew about them in WWE.
Right. It seems like New Day should be meeting Gallows and Anderson in the violence level, but it's going the other direction, and it's made this feud feel kind of tepid to me.
The comedy thing is funny. I mean, it's not what they're known for in the sense that, like, obviously in like Japan they were bruisers too, but like Gallows is, you know, has some like legendary YouTube clips of him just like doing like the whatever the brother character that he does, and like, I mean. And if that's the future, if that's his future in WWE, I'm all in. But it's an interesting look for them.
I mean, it was weird just seeing New Day have comedy done
to
onto them.
Yeah,
that was a weird look. But there's no question. Or I'll ask you guys: this is the least over that New Day has been since they broke out. I think for sure. Like when they, maybe it was a Biggie isn't their thing, but when they tried to get the New Day Rocks thing going off of that weird double on top, you know,
they were,
that
was not, they were missing Big E.
Do we know where Big E is? Is he like tweeting as if he's like in the hospital? I have no idea.
I haven't been looking at his Twitter. Are they gonna break him off? Is this the moment?
It's interesting.
I think they're gonna lose.
I frankly think that like I'm happy to get a look at Xavier and Kofi, like just getting a run as a duo, not because I want Big E to leave, because like I feel like we haven't actually seen every iteration of the New Day really work.
All. This is another too soon sort of breakup situation.
I'm like all in on Big E. I think that there's a way to push him as a single star that doesn't even have to break up the New Day. Like, I think you could just sort of have him be an upper card single star, and then have the, you know, having three guys as a tag team was sort of maybe overstated its welcome.
I totally agree. I mean, I don't know that Kofi's not the single star if you want to keep them together and push somebody, but I think Big E's more logical. For some reason, that is the hardest thing for WWE to do. Either they can't wrap their heads around it, or just functionally it doesn't work, which is to push a singles wrestler from a faction or from a tag team,
right,
without doing the really obvious breakup or whatever. Like, it's kind of nuts.
Yeah, they have to super kick somebody through a plate glass window every time.
Hip toss, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry.
Like, Biggie's the one out of, I mean, they, I don't think that... On, I mean, I can't criticize how they've booked the New Day. I mean, they've gotten so over, but I don't think they've been vicious enough at times. There have been times to just put them over clean, and I don't think they've done that enough, especially now that they're faces. But Big E seems like he is the one where when there have been moments where you see Big E go, and you could almost imagine him being either face or heel. You can imagine him being almost like a Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
You know?
No, he's really good. So wait, what's your pick? Sam?
I think that the club's winning. I think that Big E's...
Me too.
Dave's
Big E not being there. Is there.
All right. I'll agree. I'll go with that. Three for the club.
And I think this means that Gallows and Anderson can then work with Enzo and Cass, who beat Jericho and Owens. And so you've got a different look to the tag team division. And was it not SummerSlam last year that the New Day won the titles for this reign, right? Wouldn't it be kind of like delicious symmetry?
Was it? Yeah, SummerSlam.
Yeah, it was SummerSlam.
That's actually a really good point. I think if they do a New Day, if we have like a New Day squabble, like a breakup feud between them, I hope they bring in the like some variation on the Freebird rules where like every match between them is a three-way match, but they just call it a one-on-one match. I don't know if that made any sense. Next up is Sasha Banks versus Charlotte for the Women's Championship. Dana Brooke banned from ringside.
Oh, boy.
Thoughts?
I'm conflicted. I think that my first thought is there's no way they can just take it off of Sasha right after, you know, putting it on her. But then I really deconstruct it, and I don't see if Sasha wins, then I don't see where she goes from here. You can't continue that feud if she's won twice.
The only answer is Nia Jax, but I think that's too soon.
And it's too soon. I don't see where. I think that Sasha right now, for where she is at, needs Charlotte.
Yeah, and Charlotte needs the belt.
Yeah,
Charlotte isn't over without being the cocky heel that is the champion unfairly.
Despite all of the Dana Brooke shenanigans that have happened over the past month, I think that the best thing that they could do for this division by far is to have Charlotte win clean after like a long, hard-fought match, and then you can just reboot the underdog Sasha Banks as underdog gimmick angle for another 3 months.
You
or
run
something
it to
like
WrestleMania,
that. Yeah, all the way. The fact that they put the fact that they put the belt on her so quickly, I think it's totally defensible just in terms of having this be a champ versus ex-champ match at SummerSlam. You know, like sometimes you make those decisions based on, you know, gate and not logic or storytelling logic, and that's fine. But I don't think there's any reason why. Yeah, if you want to run this to WrestleMania, Charlotte wins. And I think that honestly, for the sake of women's wrestling going forward, let her win clean. It doesn't matter that she's a heel. Just let her this can be a great match that leaves both people coming out looking better.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact that Dana Brooke is banned, I mean, it's just something's going to happen. Maybe Rick's going to come back, you know, whatever. But, like, man, I would put her over clean. Sam?
I agree. People forget not that she's her father, but I think people forget that Flair went clean a lot.
He did.
Yeah.
He really, and it mattered. And
he had to, because he was a guy carrying the territory for years.
Yeah.
So he couldn't always get over by, you know, Arn Anderson running in or Tully Blanchard running in. He had to win sometimes.
Yeah. He had to win so he could close the show inviting everybody back to the hotel bar. I mean, that was like a bit, he had to be the last man standing. Yeah.
I'm also ready for, I just want to fast forward to Sasha turning on Bayley and
that's going to be a great feud
just
too.
Doing it in WWE. Oh,
yeah,
it's so weird with the as few women as there are, and obviously the ranks are growing. It seems like every week, but there's going to be a lot of dream matches that we're just not going to get to see because of the brand split.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, if Bayley goes to SmackDown, then we're going to be drooling over a Sasha Bailey match or a Charlotte Bailey match for, I mean, maybe they'll figure out a way to pull that together for like a WrestleMania or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of crazy for as long as they stick with this brand split that there's going to be such big matches. I feel like we've seen every iteration of every men's match on the main roster.
Yeah.
Obviously with Finn, you know, once Finn kind of solidifies himself, there's, I'm sure, like, I could fantasize about a Finn, you know, Bray Wyatt match forever. But like, but yeah, I mean, the women's division is going to be particularly interesting in that way. Mm-hmm. Next up is Rusev versus Roman Reigns. Let's spend as little time on this as possible, guys. What's your pick?
I'm going to go with Rusev because he laid down on Monday. There's no way that he loses twice. They telegraphed it in every way possible.
There's no way. Rusev's that Raw match telegraphed it 100%. Couldn't agree more. There's no way.
The only way is Roman Reigns. I mean, Roman Reigns exists.
No.
This is as good a time as any to drop in. I think we said this before we started rolling, that Roman Reigns obviously just coming back from a wellness policy suspension, and Alberto Del Rio just got pinged this morning, and he's out for 30 days. I assume he's probably not going to come back with the same fanfare as Roman Reigns did. Although, if anybody on the roster, and I love Del Rio, and I don't give a flying F about steroids or whatever else you're putting in your body, but if anybody on the roster was just like a walking sign that like that the wellness policy isn't working for the past few months, it was Del Rio, because he just looked like a CGI version of himself since his return.
Yeah, he looks ridiculous.
He looks strange. Like, his body parts don't go together in the normal
way. It's like taking apart action figures and sticking them back together or something. Yeah. On the wrong body.
It's grotesque to look at, for sure.
But
next.
Next. John Cena versus AJ Styles.
Ooh, baby.
This is a singles match with no stipulations, right? I mean, it's basically an old-fashioned grudge match. But.
Yeah. SummerSlam misses at least one or two gimmick matches here. This is an obvious place to do Last Man Standing or Extreme Rules or a cage match or something to liven up this third iteration of this feud. But I mean, maybe they run it again next month.
This feud could go on for a year. I don't think anybody would be that upset. As long as they keep giving us good matches on SmackDown.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, with other people on SmackDown. Like, man, this has been fun. And I think the fact that the past month has been pretty minimal in terms of, like, story advancement, mm-hmm. but it's still really interesting. Like, because it's sort of more realistic. You don't need some crazy new stakes in terms of the storytelling.
Yeah.
You know that these guys don't like each other, and in real life, like, fights don't get resolved, you know? It's like somebody quits fighting at some point, but like, I don't know. I've really enjoyed the simplicity of the past month.
I would love them to run it back again, and I think that the fact that they did a six-man at Battleground instead of one-on-one, I think might be a sign that
there's a third.
They don't have to commit to this being the rubber match. Yeah. They could just kind of wipe away Battleground as AJ 1-1.
Yeah.
And then Cena, and then
I feel like we have a lot of baby faces going over so far, and so that makes me think maybe AJ takes this one, and then there's one more where Cena.
It's crazy that I'm looking at the card and I'm wondering if this is going to be like the Savage Steamboat of this. Like, John Cena has come so far in just terms of in-ring storytelling. We're getting the wrap up symbol from Tate Frazier. Hey Tate, what's your Twitter handle?
Just Tate Frazier.
That's not true, right? Oh, Tate Frazier, at Tate Frazier. Yeah, everybody complained to him. Let's run through the rest of these really quickly. Dean Ambrose versus Dolph Ziggler.
It's got to be Ambrose. And Ziggler, I feel like maybe is going to turn heel.
This is my, I hope to God they just let him be Ric Flair, you know, just turn him heel and make him great again.
Maybe he gets corrupted by Bray Wyatt, that he joins the Wyatt family.
This is a pet peeve of mine. I do not like when there's a guy who's in the feud quite clearly on TV and is not in the match. It just moves over the match.
It's very strange.
I don't like it, especially when it's Bray, who's ruined a few pay-per-view matches in his career by just kind of lingering.
Your Canadianism just came out when you said ruined.
Ruined. It's always going to be him, too, because they don't know what to do with him. This is the WrestleMania thing all over again, where it's like, he doesn't have a match, but you know something is going to happen with him.
Who are we more likely to see on make a surprise appearance, him or Sami Zayn?
I think Sami Zayn ends up working NXT. So I'm going to say Bray Wyatt.
It's a great call.
Yeah.
I think Dean wins, no question.
Do you think Ember Moon is going to take is Sami Zayn the TBA against Ember
Moon? I think it might be.
Okay, so wait, you both have Ambrose?
Oh, yeah. There's no way Dolph Ziggler walks out with the belt.
Honestly, Dean Ambrose has done too good of a job since he got the belt. Since SmackDown started, he's a champion. He is so much a champion.
You see him on the posters. You see him in the opening credits of the show, and it's like, this is the guy. They really did it.
Finn Balor versus Seth Rollins for the Universal Championship, the new super important championship.
This is a hard one to pick.
Are we sure? Are we 100% sure that the demon on Raw worked?
I found it really interesting that
they got a holy shit chant.
Mick Foley was the crowd. I have had issues with that entrance since he showed up in NXT.
Yeah, me too.
I think I'm back on Cheap Heat. I referred to it as community theater adjace. But on Raw it looked better than it ever did on NXT.
In a little tiny arena.
I don't really get him putting on the demon to scare somebody without a match. Like I thought the whole thing was it's this big pre-match ritual, like it's just for that night.
That was the stupidest part about it. The entrance itself worked fine, and I think the crowd was like, wow, that's really cool, but you've not only wasted a thing that could get people excited about the match, but you've also done this thing where it cheapens the gimmick.
Yeah, I agree with that, Sam.
He's winning, though, by the way. He's got to win.
You think Finn?
He can't lose.
I think Finn's going to win, but it's again, it could go either way. I mean, just to have Rollins be the guy who's the first Universal Champion makes a certain amount of sense for the way that they seem to trust and love Rollins justifiably.
Sure.
I'm going to pick Rollins just because of that reason, but I am really pessimistic on where Finn goes if he loses. I feel like Finn needs this.
He literally has to win.
I'm with you. Nothing has made me more skeptical, though, than... And also, I guess you could look at this as a promising sign for him, just based on WWE history, but the whole Demon King thing, which, by the way, congrats to Mick Foley for being the only person who can say Demon King with the appropriate emphasis. Everybody else was just saying Demon Kane.
Yeah.
Like they were so used to saying the Demon Kane that they were saying the Demon King, which is not how you...
The Demon King.
Yeah, it's the Demon King.
He has to win, because if he loses, then he goes to work with, God knows,
Cruiserweights.
Sheamus or something. Yeah.
I completely agree, and I think that if... I mean, the worst part wasn't that it sounded like they were saying Demon Kane, but that they were booking him like Kane, when it would be just like, where is this demon? All I see is a guy in a suit. And then then the monster would come out. And it's like, you're just like, this is clearly the same. This is a wrestling gimmick. Why do I care about this entrance? Anyway, Tate is doing a dance now. One more match. Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton. Is there any way... Well, my vote's Orton.
Let's just do this. Orton's going to win, I think.
I got to go with Brock.
That would be the surprise.
I think
I heard some rumblings that Brock might be in line for a title shot on Raw.
Really?
Which would be weird if he's working with Finn Balor. But
I think the only the interesting thing is going to be seeing if Brock puts anybody over the remainder of his contract, because it's like if he gets the vibe that they're sort of using him, if that they don't want to push him back to the top. I mean, they can put him in a title match, but not to like be a long running champion. Does he just lose interest? Like Dean Ambrose alluded to, on the Stone Cold podcast, and just sort of check out and just be like, yeah, I don't really feel like doing that match.
I feel like this is a what are we waiting for situation, kind of like how we said, oh, the Shield triple threat, it's got to be WrestleMania, and they just ended up doing it. I sort of feel like it was Roman. Okay, Roman's gonna go over Brock finally, or is that what we're holding Brock for? What are we waiting for?
I think everything we need to know about this match will be clear when we see where it goes on the card.
Yeah.
If this is like right before your intermission match, basically, not that there's an intermission, but if it's like halfway through the card,
Brock's winning.
You think so?
I think if it closes the show or is close to the end, that means that the conquering hero, Randy Orton, takes the match.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. I just meant for like the significance of Brock Lesnar going forward. This could be the main event if he's going to be challenging for the belt next week. You know? I mean, like it'll say a lot about what we think about Lesnar.
My feeling is this is the main event.
Yeah, I think so too.
According to Wikipedia, it's the top match, but that doesn't mean anything.
It'll be good for SmackDown if Orton wins. So that could be the one reason why he goes over.
All right, we got to get out of here. Is there any news? Props to Heath Slater. I feel like that just needs to be said on a weekly
incredible
basis
work
now.
From him and from Brock.
The Brock saying, "I don't give a you know what about your kids," was, I think, the best moment of either show.
Oh yeah, better, for sure.
Just wait for my SummerSlam preview column, because that's my opener. I guess that's it, guys. Enjoy SummerSlam. Enjoy yes. NXT TakeOver. Enjoy all of the wonderful shenanigans that will surround. Is it four nights in a row in Brooklyn? Are they doing Raw and SmackDown there? I don't even know the answer to this.
They might be doing it at MSG.
They must be
or
going
something.
Like the Nassau Coliseum at some point, right?
They got to do MSG.
I mean, it's going to be fun, and I'm gonna get out to Brooklyn, and I'm excited, man. I get to get my old stomping grounds, and what better reason to go back than the Smark WrestleMania?
Yeah, Demon King. The Demon King.
Yeah, well, we'll get our pronunciation in check for next week. Thanks for listening, guys. On the line now is one of my buddies, but more importantly, an acclaimed documentary filmmaker, Robert Green. How you doing, man?
Good, man. How are you? Congratulations on everything. This is fancy.
Well, you can congratulate me. I mean, listen, I'll take all the praise that I can get, but I think you're a little bit more deserving right now. You are here specifically today because one of your early documentaries that I'm a huge fan of, Fake It So Real, which is about indie wrestling in North Carolina, is finally available for sale. Is that right?
I feel like The Rock, finally, yes. Finally on sale. Factory 25 is a great distributor, but they took their time in creating this DVD. So, yes, finally on sale, the Fake It So Real.
Where can people get it? I want to get this out of the way up front.
It's factory25.com. You have to I love you, Matt Grady, but why would you have to spell out Factory 25? But it's everything spelled out, including the 25, factory25.com. And on there, you just search for Fake It So Real, and the DVD is available for sale now.
Awesome. I wrote about this documentary at Grantland a few years ago. I actually just passed it along to one of my colleagues. When I did my, you know, I went back through all of the wrestling documentaries that had been made, and just sort of talked about how the documentary form is a really strange one as it pertains to the pro wrestling world. In some ways, an incredibly appropriate one. Now, there are a lot of great ones out there. Everybody knows Wrestling with Shadows. What are the other? Lipstick and Dynamite was up for an Oscar a decade ago. I highly recommend that. It's a totally different sort of thing than what you were doing. But Beyond the Mat, of course, is the one that everybody talks about.
That's the big one. Yeah.
Yeah. We became friends after I saw your documentary. I fell in love with the documentary before I fell in love with your bald head and our mutual bald man appreciation society. But it's a really great documentary. It's very, for people that don't know, I mean, it's a small documentary. It's not taking on an era of pro wrestling. It's not following famous wrestlers around for a year. It's a very kind of concise, several months in the life of a super small time wrestling organization in, a small town in North Carolina. But it somehow, for me, just spoke to the world of pro wrestling more than any other documentary I've seen. There's something about the passion of the wrestlers, and about just the sort of simple artifice of the whole thing. What can you give us just a quick background on, like, what drew you to those wrestlers and why you think it speaks to wrestling fans?
Well, thanks for all that. And I remember that article you wrote was validated my entire life, so I appreciated that. documentaries and wrestling is kind of like it for me. I've always wanted to make a documentary about wrestling. I'm a huge wrestling fan, lifetime wrestling fan. Still, I watched Raw last night. And for me, there's just such an interesting thing when you put a camera on people in general, they perform in a certain way. And obviously, that is what, you know, pro wrestling is life turned up to 11, is the, you know, a character turned up to 9/11. That's the cliche. And I think there's just such interesting connection between making documentaries or documentary films and documentary characters and what we love about wrestling, pro wrestling. The word you use often is unreality, which I love so much. And I'm often like talking to my documentary world friends about, like, you can't really understand what you do or what you like about nonfiction filmmaking until you understand pro wrestling. And that's and for me, that's because there's this all these sort of layers of real and not real and constructed and not and authentic and everything that we kind of get into when we get excited about, you know, the character building in wrestling, is the same stuff you're dealing with in documentary. And so that was always the impetus for me to want to make it. And my cousin is one of the wrestlers. So Chris Solar, who is was born with his intestines on the outside of his body, he was the kid that when we were growing up we couldn't you know, beat him up or anything or play sports or anything like that because he'd always be too fragile to do that. And one day he said, "I want to be a pro wrestler," and we all thought, "Well, you're going to die. That's terrible. It's a terrible idea." And he's since, you know, created this persona. This Chris Baldwin became Chris Solar, and really in the movie you see him. He's a great heel, and he plays the character well. And so I always wanted to make that film. I had this connection to Chris, and I knew that these guys were doing it in a way that was, like you said, passionate and totally totally the same life that I had. You know, like I want to make films. I'm working my ass off to do that, and they want to make their art, and they're working their ass off to do that. And I just, it was you know, it was an easy fit, you know, big ideas plus, you know, grounded reality stuff. I actually filmed over one week was the main crux of the movie. And then we filmed a little bit more to fill it in. And yeah, it's leading up to one show. And I think it works partly just because it's not about the fame. It's not about the personalities in the same way we usually think about wrestling. It's actually about the ideas of what it means to be and why you want to be and why you might be into, you know, the art of pro wrestling, you know, and it's that's the main focus, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly one of the most artful wrestling documentaries, if not the most, which, I mean, is not what you said, but I think it's an interesting relationship between the way that you filmed it and your feelings about the form. I mean, if only strictly for the sequence where they set up the ring, I think this is worth buying and watching. But to take this a little bit out of just the wrestling world, and I started off alluding to the congratulations or the admiration that you deserve since you've made this documentary. You've made some others. You talked a little bit before about nonfiction filmmaking, but You have a documentary called Actress that's on Netflix now. If I can trust my cue, that's right here in front of me, and a new documentary that was at Sundance this year called Kate Plays Christine. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, and it's a movie about, I mean, wrestling fans will understand this kind of concept even better than you know, the regular moviegoer or something.
Right.
It's a documentary about an actor playing the role of a woman who committed suicide on air in 1974. So it's a nonfiction film about the acting process. Essentially, it's like watching anything that we love, kind of like, you know, you're watching the person play themselves as they try to play something else. And that's kind of like, to me, that has a lot of correlatives with wrestling, obviously.
Yeah, and I mean, I know with Actress, there are a lot of people, a lot of the reviews were sort of, you know, one of the inherent questions with the film is how much of it is performance and how much of it is authenticity. And I think that you know, as a wrestling fan, there's this sort of odd kind of awareness that those two things aren't necessarily separate. You know, I mean, we all are. We're all very much aware that what we experience as you know, intrinsically as a real thing is artifice at the same time, right?
Yeah, unreality is a great word for documentary as well. And what I love is I have plenty of times where, like, I try to bring up pro wrestling as a metaphor for understanding the stuff as much as possible. I've written a couple articles about it myself, and And I love that afterwards, people, after seeing the movies, you know, people say like, oh, it makes complete sense that you're a wrestling fan. And then, you know, because I remember one of my favorite memories ever was when Terry Funk, and I think it was 1989 or maybe 91 or something like that, where he, after the Steamboat, Ricky Steamboat match, he pile drove Ric Flair through the table. And I knew at that point it was fake. And I totally knew it was real at the same time, and it was this realization that at the same moment it was staged and totally authentic, and you know, and the way that they artfully brought him into the if you remember what I'm talking about, it was not after Starrcade, it was after some match, but it was just. The way they brought him in the ring, the way they set it up, the way they extended the moment to where it couldn't have been fake. But at the same time, I knew as a young, you know, I was like 12 or 13. I was like, look, I know it's not real. But I was crying like it was real and, you know, desperate that, for Ric Flair to get his revenge, you know. That sort of feeling of like being brought into the situation by questioning what you're watching is exactly what I want people to do with my movies, you know. And so I think, you know, a lot of times pro wrestling fans can be like, oh, I completely get it.
Yeah. Well, it's nice that you, that you kind of pay tribute to wrestling fans in the way that you describe it. But also, I mean, you know, to bring this back full circle, your movie Fake It So Real is, I think one of my favorite things about it as a wrestling fan is the level of sort of heart and pride that the wrestlers have, and that you as a filmmaker sort of put on exhibit. You know, there's not the wink that like we all, oh, this is bullshit. There's not, you know, it feels like that you're in it with them and that you take it seriously. And as your friend, I know that's true, but I think that's even some of the best wrestling documentaries dwell a little bit too much on the like, you know, elbow in the ribs, hee hee sort of aspect of the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean that's you know, as a fan, that's the worst part. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, people like wrestling for all kinds of reasons, and there's so many reasons to like it. The reason why I like it is because it makes me, because it's art. I mean, because I watch it like I watch any kind of art, and I watch it like, and it's my favorite, you know, and except for maybe movies, it's my favorite art form because it brings up all these things that I actually care about in the world, and even when it's like, even when it's really, you know, bad, quote unquote, or like, and I don't mean bad, like as in Matt Hardy bad, like, I mean, like as in, you know, terrorists, you know, attacking the Undertaker. And like, even when it's like that, you're like, wait, there's something to this form that is like weird and problematic and also like exhilarating and scary sometimes in ways that there's no other art form. And what I mean, in Fake It So Real, the best part is that those guys don't necessarily talk about it like this. They're doing it, and they're working class dudes who are like bringing themselves, you know, they have to do everything themselves. They're not making money doing this. And so those ideas just come through their actions. They're not sitting around pontificating about it like we're doing right now. They're doing it. They live it and they believe in it and believe in themselves. And so it's really grounded in their realities. But at the same time, I think it does sort of scratch that itch of like, if you get excited about some of these things in wrestling, if you get excited when you're definitely sure that Shawn Michaels is going to break his back at SummerSlam 2002, and they're like, he's totally real, and this is just an ego burst, you know, it was something like that. If those are the things that excite you, if your favorite matches are the ones where you're not sure what's real and what's not, then the movie might just like, you know, get in there, get in your brain a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. Well, you mentioned SummerSlam, you know, 92, but I know that you're still paying attention. We got a SummerSlam coming up this weekend. What do you have? Do you have any predictions for I guess we have Ambrose versus Ziggler for the WWE title and Rollins versus Finn Balor for this new Universal title, or anything else too? What are your thoughts on the show?
I mean, it seems crazy that they would build up Finn Balor so much to watch him lose. So, I mean, maybe the clubs are going to come out and help him. We're going to get the Balor Club finally. I don't know. But it also seems like totally possible that they want, you know, the new title, which is the worst name of titles in history, which I know you've already talked about many times. Literally the dumbest. I mean, it's, I mean, everything Daniel Bryan said about it is completely right. You know, I love that he was like shooting on that. But I mean, so Rollins could win, become like, he was the first NXT champion. He could be the first. I mean, I can't even say the word. I'm not gonna say Universal Champion. That just sounds like so dumb. It hurts. But I'm gonna predict Finn. I'll make a prediction that Finn Balor will win the title. And I can't imagine that they're gonna give Dolph Ziggler the WWE title. I mean, I think that this is one of those feuds where it's like, let's just pad this. Let's, you know, they probably thought they were gonna take the title off of Dean Ambrose, and they're probably, now they're thinking, let's just pad this guy for a couple months and give him something, and then build up to something. Hopefully more meaningful, but I've actually liked what they've done with Dolph. I think it's, I mean, it feels like about 3.5 years too late, but it's, I'm excited to at least watch him have a character, which he hasn't had before.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
The great thing about Dolph is that it's both 3.5 years too late, but it feels like it was just yesterday. Like his entire, if you told me that he was in a team with Big E and AJ like 9 months ago, I would kind of believe you. I'd be doing the math in my head, but like, I'd be like, yeah, that's possible, right? But yeah, I mean, time doesn't exist for Dolph Ziggler, and that's both for better or for worse.
He's been put in a chamber, and he's just been frozen. I mean, he even kind of looks like he's been put in a chamber. That chin, you know, it's like he just, like, you know, like that's it. He just comes out, and his pants have definitely changed. He's definitely started to ape Shawn Michaels more and more every day. But nevertheless, yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, he's reverse. He's like it's the Benjamin Button thing, except he's like reverse aging into 1996 Shawn Michaels. It's very strange.
I mean, I will say. I think Randy Orton's going to win against Brock Lesnar. I think they got to make a statement with a win. And I think Orton looks a little bit like he cares for once.
Sure.
And so I don't know. I think he's going to hit an RKO, and it's going to be pretty good. I would really like that to happen. That's my thing I most want to happen, which obviously before all the bad news came, I didn't think I wanted that guy to lose, but now I definitely want Orton to win.
Well, I don't know if you saw Ambrose on Austin's podcast, although I'm guessing you probably took a look at it, but he alluded to, he alluded to some of Brock's lack of WrestleMania preparation or at least lack of engagement prior to WrestleMania. And, I mean, it's just one of the, it's almost at this point, like, you know, when you hear a dirt sheet write about like somebody getting beat up backstage, like that guy can't win, because it just sort of like puts the lie to the whole thing at this point. Lesnar, with everything that's happened to Lesnar in the, you know, kind of off camera in the past month, it would just be such a weird decision to put him over. But, you know, weirder things have happened in WWE.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, yeah, I feel like I almost feel like there could be a locker. I mean, we don't know. I mean, it's all hearsay, really, but there could be some sort of revolt, because I think people are genuinely pissed off. As someone else wrote, some other dirt sheet writer said, you know, like, Ambrose wouldn't have said that stuff on that podcast if he didn't feel like he was going to have, like, they were going to have his back. You normally wouldn't be able to say, yeah, Lesnar, the richest guy, I mean, one of the biggest names and the cash cow and all that, you know, supposedly cash cow. We don't even know if he's actually a cash cow, but he's lazy. I mean, he said the word lazy, which is like pretty intense criticism. So I don't know. I feel like this is the time. Have Randy Orton hit that thing, hit his RKO. And then maybe they can actually then do something interesting with Lesnar again, you know, and they certainly can help elevate Orton, which I think is necessary for SmackDown.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm artificially exciting myself for like this Randy Orton, like this stage of his career. It's probably like every other stage that I've been excited for. Gonna have a, you know,
disappointment.
No, it's not a disappointment. It's just that there's a, you know, there's an expiration date on my excitement. I just sort of, I get really stoked for about 3 months, and then, you know, I move on to something else.
Then he's wrestling Sheamus, and then you're like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm also a Sheamus fan. I try to keep my spirits up by look on the bright side of all these things. Anyway, thank you so much for getting on the phone with me, man. I'm sure, I hope everybody listening to this checks out Fake It So Real. Say the website one more time.
It's factory25.com, and you can find Fake It So Real on there. Factory 25 is all written out. And Kate Plays Christine comes out in New York August 24th, and it's coming to L.A. September 16th, which I will be out there. So if you're out there, we should get a beer or something.
All right, I'll have you call into the podcast next week so we can make plans. We'll have a beer scheduling segment every week on this podcast.
It's the only time to get you on the phone is through the podcast. I see this is, you're a very busy guy.
You and my mom should have a conversation about it. You know? Thank you so much, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you so much. Bye.
All right, that's the show. Thanks to Dave Schilling. Thanks to Sam Donsky. Thanks to the wonderful Robert Green. Thanks to Tate and Joe and Isabella and the Godfather Bill Simmons. The Masked Man Show will be back next week after SummerSlam. Be sure to check it out, humanoids.